the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. As we approach the weekend, it's time to examine what's happening in the cinema. So we've invited Little White Lies editor David Jenkins to give us his expert opinion on the week's releases. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey there.
Now, let's kick off today with The Birth of a Nation, the somewhat provocatively titled film, evoking the rather classic silent picture, but giving everything a very, very different slant. Introduce us to this film.
So, yeah, this is the Sundance sensation. If people are unaware, this film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival at the beginning of 2016 and received rapturous response from audiences, became the sort of centre of a huge bidding war. So Fox Pictures ended up paying an ungodly sum for it, and there was this incredible amount of hype. And this was back in January. And, you know, it's a week is a long time in the movies.
And it certainly is, yeah.
And since then, this film has kind of been chipped away at over the years. And what started as this kind of big Oscar frontrunner has now sort of almost just died a death.
And it's really, yeah, it seems as though it has no chance of making it to the Oscars anymore. But it should be noted that that has actually nothing to do with the film itself. A lot of that had to do, well, all of that really has to do with this horrible rape allegation that was put against Nate Parker. Now, much has been written about that, and from what we understand is that he was accused of raping a fellow classmate some years ago, and that never actually went ahead. He was never charged. All of that aside, people can read about that if they want to, that has really drawn the film down by a lot of controversy, and there are a lot of people that seem to not really want to have anything to do with it just based upon that murkiness.
I mean, the interesting thing is, from my perspective, is I saw the film recently, completely set aside all this kind of personal stuff which is happening in the real world. The sort of sad fact of the matter is that it's actually not a very good film. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why it is kind of slightly tailed off.
That's quite interesting, though. This is probably the only time I've heard someone actually say that. Everything I've read about this film has been that, yes, it had this amazing response, but then the controversy killed it. You're saying that, no. Being a bad film killed it.
No, yeah, I absolutely think so. I mean, it went to the Sundance Film Festival, and by dint of that, it's got this kind of attached indie credo. I think that people thought it was a kind of a quality film, whereas actually it's the most Hollywood kind of production you could ever make. It hits all those very Hollywood cues, and I don't say Hollywood in a bad way. It's a very sentimental film. Just to sort of scroll back a little and talk about what it is, it's a recreation of the kind of slave revolutionary Nat Turner, made by the director Nate Parker, who plays Turner in the film. And it's pretty much, if you've seen the film Braveheart, it hits all those similar beats as Braveheart. It's very rousing and very sentimental, and it's a very kind of one-sided view of history, I think. And
Mel Gibson in Southern 1830s America.
Exactly, it is. I think that it's an entertaining film on a very sort of superficial level, in that you have this kind of hero that you're sort of following, and he is witnessing all these horrible injustices, the humiliations piled upon slaves in Virginia in the 1830s. You watch as he's kind of piling these things up in his kind of memory bank. And it's one of those kind of, you know, the fuse is burning and you're kind of just waiting for it to explode. And it does that in a very kind of classical way, and it delivers in the most kind of conventional way possible, I think. I guess it's interesting and curious, but there was nothing that I thought was actually good or interesting about it.
I don't think it necessarily needs to walk away with the trophy.
No, it's completely undeserving of that. It's an interesting conversation starter, I guess. It covers very interesting, very kind of contemporary topics worthy of sort of broader discussion, and this film maybe starts those discussions. But on its own merits, you know, I just don't think there's anything there.
Well, that is The Birth of a Nation, out now in the US, Canada and Brazil, and will be out across Europe in January. Well, let's move on to Krisha Now, which is the story of a woman with a rather distant relationship with her family. However, as Thanksgiving beckons, she somehow finds herself preparing, well, something of a banquet for her entire extended family. Let's hear a clip.
I have stayed away while I was healing myself.
You are a lever. You are heartbreak incarnate. If you think you can just pop in and pop out of people's lives like this, you are malinformed.
You don't know who I am. You don't know anything about what I'm here trying to do. What's going on with you? Chad totally hates me now. I'm not going back.
Grisha,
I've earned a right to be at this table.
Well, David, family dysfunction at Thanksgiving or Christmas if you're outside the US, maybe not foreign to a lot of people, but this one comes with a few different strings attached. What's happening to Grisha? I understand that she's a woman in her 60s and she's fighting off a drug addiction.
That element of the film comes in sort of very slowly but surely over the film. So like the first shot of the film, you're introduced to this woman, Grisha Fairchild, who's actually the aunt of director Trey Edward Schultz. And she drives up in front of this big house and gets out of her big car and starts walking towards the house. And she instantly remembers that she's forgotten her luggage. So she has to walk all the way back and get her luggage. And then she walks into the wrong house and presses a doorbell and has to kind of walk across this prim front lawn. And she walks into a little drainage ditch and, you know, even before she's even met the family, everything possible that could have gone wrong
Making it to the front door has its own dysfunction.
Indeed it does. And it's not done in a kind of signposting way. These elements of the film only really kind of mean something when you get to the end of it and you kind of the entire story and her entire character is revealed. And this is a kind of very delicate, slow burn, very intense character study, which is kind of all, everything is driven on the back of this incredible central performance by Grisha herself.
So, I mean, this has all the hallmarks of being a slow-burning, independent character study, which, I mean, can be very, very nice. Tell me about the plot movement. By the end, do you feel as though you've gone on this, I suppose, an optimistic journey with this character?
No. In a word, no. To be honest, it's... I don't think things like optimism, pessimism really come into it. It's just, I think that what the director is wanting to do is just something to, just wanting to show something that's quite real and awkward. I mean, there's no real message to the film. It's just, let's just watch the process of this woman who has got this highly addictive personality as she attempts to reforge bonds with an estranged family and sort of, you know, she sort of slowly succumbs to her own vices. It's empathetic, but non-judgmental. You feel for her and you kind of feel sorry for the fact that she is driven by this force that she can't really comprehend. Going back to the thing we were saying about Sundance and Birth of a Nation, this film feels like it's a kind of the thing that a Sundance film should be like. I mean, it has a kind of credibility. It's got a slightly experimental edge. It's a filmmaker who's trying to take quite a normal situation and do something interesting with it. And I think Trey Edward Schultz really succeeds. And, you know, he is definitely someone whose name will be cropping up in bigger festivals, bigger cinemas. He's quite a talent.
Well, that is Grisha. It's out now in the US and released today in the United Kingdom. Well, let's move on now to Snowden. The story, of course, of Edward Snowden is by now quite familiar indeed to anyone who might have picked up a newspaper over the past 3 or so years. But only now has it been given the Oliver Stone treatment. Let's have a listen.
The NSA is really tracking every cell phone in the world.
Most Americans don't want freedom. They want security.
Except people, they don't even know they've made that bargain.
Are they watching us?
There's something going on inside the government that's really wrong, and I can't ignore it. I just want to get this data to the world.
Hey.
I feel like I'm made to do this, and if I don't do it, then I don't know anybody else that can.
David, Oliver Stone is obviously no stranger to the public when it comes to his political leanings. We know he tends to lean somewhat towards the left. And I suppose that meant that a lot of people were surprised when W came out quite a few years ago. And that account of George W. Bush didn't really seem to throw a hell of a lot of judgment in any direction. Tell me about his treatment of Snowden. Interestingly, a very highly political figure, but of course not a political leader like many of his earlier films.
Just to sort of loop back very quickly, there's a documentary by a director called Laura Poitras called Citizen Four, which was a sort of lengthy interview with Edward Snowden in Hong Kong at the point where he was about to kind of release all this hidden information that he'd secured. And it's this documentary that plays like a thriller, and you get a vision of the real Edward Snowden. And a lot of this Oliver Stone film is based on Citizen Four. It's also worth saying that where that film gave the most objective view possible of Snowden, this one is the kind of fawning hagiography version that is utterly in love with Snowden and is completely on the side of what he did and why he did it. And this is an account of why Edward Snowden is a hero. And
that is a very, very popular position to be in, though. I was talking quite recently to the journalist at The Guardian here in London, Luke Harding, mm-hmm. who wrote the book upon which this film is partly based. And even he started the interview that we had by saying that he does believe that Edward Snowden is absolutely in the right and that what he did has had a fantastic effect on world politics. Obviously, that is arguable, but there are many, many people who do view Edward Snowden as an out-and-out hero. Is it possible to watch this film and come away with some sort of critical analysis in your head, or did you feel as though it was actually aggressively attempting to bring you over to its way of thinking?
Oh, definitely the latter. I just don't feel I need a film to tell me that. It's a sort of well-known viewpoint, and it's the sort of thing that you can, you can read in a tweet. It's an opinion you can take in like, 140 characters. These kind of portraits need to have a kind of an element of objectivity, an element of questioning, an element of showing two sides to a situation, or accepting the fact that we can never really know a person or their motivations or what they're really like. And this is just the most positive, gushing version of Edward Snowden that you could possibly want.
I find that a complete shame, because when I read about all of the details about what Edward Snowden did, I come away thinking this is such a moral minefield, because it is easy to fall onto that side of Oliver Stone and Luke Harding and the rest and say that what he's done, everything about him is a hero, heroic. But I don't think it is that simple. And that, I suppose, that does make me doubt Oliver Stone quite often as a filmmaker as well, because I felt the same way about W. A lot of people said that it refrains from making a judgment. I felt that it refrained from saying anything really at all. Mm. I came away from that film with my mind feeling a bit vacant. I'm not entirely sure that he is the sharp political filmmaker that perhaps he has often been touted as.
Well, I think going back a few years to things like JFK and Nixon, I love those films, and I think I love them because he almost moves aside from the actual subject and looks at it from a different vantage point. From JFK, it's from a prosecutor who's trying to overturn the Warren Commission. And I almost feel that this film, it needed to be told from a different perspective. I mean, I'm not telling Oliver Stone how to make movies here, but like, I feel that this is Oliver Stone's love poem to Edward Snowden, and it's very kind of brazenly what it is. And it's well put together, and it's kind of, and in the same way as Birth of a Nation, it's kind of entertaining, and it has a momentum to it that keeps you with it. And at the end, there's a shrug and a sigh, and it really has got the last bit of the film in which you see the real Edward Snowden is just the cheesiest thing I can remember seeing in the cinema this year.
Very much preaching to the choir. Snowden is out this week here in the United Kingdom and is already showing in many other territories as well. And do check out the cinema show now for my interview with the journalist from The Guardian and author, Luke Harding, whose book, of course, provided some of the basis for Oliver Stone's film. You can download that now at our website. And now, finally, we have just enough time for one more film, and it is an absolute Christmas classic, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Undeniably, a film that is always dragged out around this time of year, and for very good reason. It has amazing visuals, wonderful characters, catchy music, and Tim Burton. What else could you possibly want? Let's have a listen.
Welcome to an extraordinary world filled with magic and wonder. Open your mind and let yourself go. To a place where every day is Halloween and every night Jack Skellington.
I am the Pumpkin King!
Dreams of something different.
What is this?
It's someplace new.
Jack, look out! Whoa!
What's this? What's this? There's color everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This is a star.
What is this?
Haven't you heard of peace on earth and goodwill toward men?
What is this indeed? David, I absolutely love this film and I have no problem watching it 27 times over and over and over again. How do you feel revisiting this classic?
I'm totally with you on this. I mean, it really is the Christmas gift that keeps on giving to be lame. It's still the full package and it's kind of, and remembering when Tim Burton was this, you know, great director, iconic director. And
although interestingly didn't direct this
working with Henry Selick, obviously, on this one, the great stop motion animator. I think what it is I love about this movie is that it's a family film. It's a kids' film. It's a fantasy film, but it's really terrifying, and it's really scary. I mean, if you play this film loud, if you see it in the cinema with the sound jacked right up, it really is like shakes you in your seat.
It will frighten you
Oogie
like
Boogie
a little child. That is such a fantastic scene.
Is going to haunt the nightmares of any small children who see this film.
Darkness is never far from a good Christmas tale. I was recently rewatching Meet Me in St. Louis. I would say the absolute pinnacle of Christmas classics, not It's a Wonderful Life. That can go in second place. But there's a lot of darkness in that film as well, not least coming from young Margaret O'Brien, who is constantly talking about dead bodies and horrible murders. Absolutely fantastic. Completely agree with you. The Nightmare Before Christmas, always worth revisiting. Though I do have to say, when Tim Burton was a great director, I do think he is still a great director. He's just been compressed too much by the studio system. And if anyone is feeling doubtful, do have a bit of a look at Frankenweenie, which he made a couple of years ago. Possibly one of the most Burton-esque films you're ever likely to see.
Yeah, I think he really gets back to his own when he returns to the animation. I concur with you on that as well. I think that he is a really talented, you know, individual director, but maybe hasn't had the right material.
Well, this one is certainly worth reinvigorating your memories. That is The Nightmare Before Christmas, and that brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, David Jenkins from Little White Lies magazine. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next Monday. We'll be discussing art. And do join me on The Cinema Show this week as well. I'll be chatting to the director of the stunning documentary, The Eagle Hunter. I'm Ben Ryland. Thanks for listening.